Monday Night Football preview to start this hour, just briefly, through the eyes and the words of D'Amico Ryans and also Cooper Rush. So Dak Prescott out for the rest of the season. A lot of grumbles and rumbles around the Cowboys and what changes are coming down the pike. Not that different from, say, the Jaguars or the Jets. And we'll get to them coming up. But you've already got two coaches who've been replaced, two varying results. And now we're looking ahead already. Here we are, week 11, and there are a lot of potential changes. Generally, about a quarter of the NFL head coaching jobs turn over every year. Will this be on par with what we've seen in recent years? We'll find out. But for D'Amico Ryans and the Houston Texans, they need to get back on track. So who cares if it's Cooper Rush at quarterback? And he certainly understands it's a veteran defense. Cooper's been in the league for a few years. He's been in the Cowboys system. And then CJ Stroud. Can he tap into that leadership? Can he dig down even deeper for some toughness, some grit, and be able to guide his team through adversity, because the team is counting on him to set the tone. We saw it last year when they really took the league by surprise. That's not happening anymore. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. That's your Monday Night Football game to wrap up week 11 in the NFL. And right now the Texans are at 6-4, but they've dropped back-to-back games. As for the Cowboys, they're at 3-6. They've lost 4 in a row. If they lose on Monday night, they will be sitting in the same miserable spot as the Giants, having lost 5 games in a row. The only team right now that has a longer losing skid is the Raiders, who've dropped 6 in a row. And so there's another team where you wonder. They were all gung-ho Antonio Pierce. Part of the issue is they don't have a quarterback. You can't coach them up if you don't have a quarterback to lead them. And Gardner Minshew's not the answer. This is not a magical Minshew year. Aiden O'Connell's hurt, though I'm not sure he was the answer either. Desmond Ridder, I mean, you bring him in midway through the season. What can you really ask of him? Right now, they just need enough guys, healthy bodies to fill their quarterback room. But you kind of wonder what's going to happen there. 855-212-4227. Love for you to take our poll for Monday MVP. Wait until you see the sweet message in the form of a GIF that I put on our Facebook page. It's named after the show, also at Amy After Hours on our show Twix. Uh-huh. It's still a Twix. And around Halloween, we had some mini Twixes, which made me laugh. It's like a private joke with the candy. Let's jump into Ravens and Steelers. This was the second most chosen option for After Hours game of the week behind Chiefs and Bills. And honestly, we should have known. This was a typical knockdown drag out. It was a slugfest, probably a more entertaining fight than what we saw between Tyson and Paul on Friday. But it was a brutal first half for Baltimore. It really was. 2 fumbles, including Derrick Henry on the first drive, and boy, was he ticked at himself. Has the ball stripped from behind as he's going to the ground, and the Steelers are able to use that to get on the board. Now, the Steelers' offense, not quite what we've seen with Russell Wilson the last 3 weeks. That makes sense. Again, these two teams, a lot of familiarity, no love lost. There were plenty of extracurricular activities, extra skirmishes and brouhahas and strongly worded conversations that were breaking out. And so each of the teams had a real ugly offense going for a good portion of this game. But Baltimore was particularly ugly. So a couple of fumbles in the first half, a pair of missed field goals. I asked this question, and I will retweet it now at A-Law Radio. Does Justin Tucker have the yips? I know that in golf you're not supposed to say that because it's considered to be taboo, but I'm serious. I'm going to retweet this and I'd love to hear from you. What is wrong with Justin Tucker? Does he have the yips? It's gone from being automatic for the most accurate field goal kicker in the NFL, and actually in NFL history, to a guy who's below 75% when it comes to his kicks. Can't hit a deep shot right now on a regular basis, and it's painful to watch. I actually feel bad for him. And so a pair of missed field goals, really the only positive possession in the first half for the Ravens, is late second quarter. Derrick Henry breaks off a 31-yard run. He breaks a couple of tackles, and they get into the red zone.
Play clock is at 15. Game clock is at 1:28. Ravens trail 6-0. They have it second and goal from inside the one. Lamar under center. Gives it to Henry. Straight ahead. The King hits, plows, and scores! And the Ravens strike for the first time this afternoon in Pittsburgh.
That's the call with Jerry Sandusky on the Ravens radio network. So he gets into the end zone. And as I say, that's really the only positive possession Baltimore has before the break. Now, Isaiah Likely leads to Isaiah Likely, his turnover, his fumble. That was the second one for them in the half. It leads to the third field goal of that first half for Pittsburgh. So again, their offense, nothing rhythmic or aesthetically pleasing in any way. Get this, the two teams, again, this is so classic to me, a combined 1 of 14 on third down in the first half. Anyone else want to stick a fork in your eye? That might have hurt less. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Now, Pittsburgh does manage to move the football in the second half, but again, they're coming up with field goals on 3 of their 4 drives in the second half. They go 0-4-4. I hate saying it like that. 0-4-4. Nope, all the same. They go 0-for.
0-4.
0-4. There we go. 0-4 on their trips into the red zone. And so great. Yay, Chris Boswell, 6 field goals. 3 of them are 50 or more yards. That's awesome. It's why he's part of our Monday MVP poll. You got to have a kicker you can count on, and that's emphasized and underscored when you see the struggles of Justin Tucker on the other sidelines. But this is not how you're going to win games for the most part. You can't be settling for field goals. This was the issue with Justin Fields as their quarterback. They needed points. That's why they went to Russ, and he really opened things up, but not this game. He had an interception in the end zone in the second half, but then what do the Ravens do? They turn around, and they give it right back. This one was a punch to the gut.
Justice Hill's to the left of Jackson, who gets the snap. Back to pass, looking, lofting for Hill downfield and makes the grab. Trail coverage for Peyton Wilson, who says he's come up with a football. Now Minka Fitzpatrick has it. The officials are going to blow this dead, and let's see what they're saying here. Steelers think they have the ball. Wilson says, I picked it off. Yeah.
Wow.
And he did. Wow. Wow is right. Peyton Wilson with the interception. I don't know if that's going to be an interception or a fumble recovery, what it's going to be. But it's going to be Steelers football.
He snatched it away from the receiver. So, yes, interception because it didn't hit the ground. But still, that was another dubious moment for the Ravens. They just get the interception to prevent more points, to prevent Russell Wilson and the Steelers from getting into the end zone. But then Lamar, it really wasn't on Lamar. It was his interception, but the Ravens essentially give it right back. So with 3.5 minutes to go, still, the Steelers are within, well, they're, you could reel them in. I'm kind of thinking of a fishing analogy, right? You can cast and you could reel them in because they've only been able to manage field goals. Baltimore gets 3 first downs and Zay Flowers catches the touchdown from 16 yards out. It's a really nicely designed play. He and Lamar Jackson have developed a sweet connection. So at this point, the Ravens are trailing by 2, and they have no choice. I wonder if they'd had a choice what they would have done. But they have no choice. They got to go for 2.
Snap. Lamar moving out to the left. Lamar being strung out, and Lamar flings it backhand incomplete, and the Steelers' defense has come up with a stop.
You know what that was? That was the second of the takeaways of Lamar. I don't know what Lamar was doing there.
Lamar takes the snap, running to the left. There's a crowd of Steelers. He fakes one. He can't get the ball out of his hands. He lobs it in the air, and it will fall incomplete. The 2-point conversion, no good.
You just lined up in that formation the opposite way. You come back to the left side this time and run basically the same play you were going to run before.
You hear the calls there on both the Steelers and the Ravens radio network, and sufficient angst for Jerry Sandusky and company on the Ravens call. Here's what came to mind as I watched that two-point conversion. It was so unorganized. It's almost like they didn't know what they were doing or someone was out of position. Think of the broadcast on the Steelers, Ravens broadcast on TV. So this is the national call. The issue was, hey, there should be a wide receiver involved here somehow, and there's just not. I mean, Nelson Agholor was blocking. They just didn't look like they were ever organized. Maybe a miscommunication. But that two-point conversion gets blown up by the Steelers because they're not on it. Meaning the Ravens, they're not on it. They're not on point. And Baltimore finishes with 16 points. The fewest points and yards of the season for the Ravens. Remember, they've been the top offense in the NFL. A dozen flags, too. And that's what really irked John Harbaugh. Those mistakes and those miscues that cost them.
Definitely something we got to do, and we got to cut down on the penalties. That's very important. We've done it before on offense. We haven't had a lot of those in some of our big offensive games, but today that was a big problem.
Tough, hard-fought game. It always is. We're just really appreciative of being in these games because we realize the growth associated with it, obviously, when you get it done. And so I'm excited for the guys in that locker room. They're excited, and they should be. They made the necessary plays. Certainly, it wasn't perfect, man, but it's not going to be when it's highly competitive and you're playing good people.
It's a fight. It always is a fight.
That's true, especially inside the AFC North, where familiarity breeds contempt. The Steelers now have 5 wins in a row. They're 8-2, which is second most wins in the conference, but right there with the Bills and the Chiefs, considering that Kansas City took a step back on Sunday. Well, what about your kicker, Chris Boswell? 6 for 6 with 3 of them over 50 yards.
I love Bos, man. I'm tired of him getting player of the week. he probably got player of the week again this week. He's deserving of it. But it reminds us of our warts. It reminds us of the work that we need to do. But, man, no doubt I'm thankful that he's on our team.
It was huge. Obviously, you know, when you think about the best teams in football, the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Ravens are up there, you know. And so to be wearing this jersey, to be out there to compete, and to know that we got a huge win together, that was huge.
Russell Wilson's first taste of Ravens and Steelers results in 4 sacks. Neither quarterback was over 70 in terms of the passer rating. So that should tell you how tough it was to come by yards and points. But they did get to him 4 times for official sacks. I actually was pretty impressed with the Steelers' ability to rush the ball. They had 122 yards rushing. They were able to limit Derrick Henry to 65 yards in the 1 score, plus he had the fumble on that opening possession. So Pittsburgh did the ball control thing. 13 extra minutes with the football. You control the ball, you control the game, and the rushing attack is a huge part of that. But as for Lamar Jackson, as for the Ravens, it wasn't just the penalties. It was the 2 fumbles, their inability to capitalize. It just was one of those messy games that you think, oi, I do not want to watch that tape.
It's been that way for ever since last year, I believe. You know, going back to the AFC Championship game, we killed ourselves. Chiefs game, the opener, killed ourselves. Raiders, we killed ourselves. And today, same thing. It's just like we can't be beating ourselves in these type of games. We got to find a way to fix that.
I have heard multiple analysts say the only way the Ravens lose is when they beat themselves. Now, I'm not sure I believe that, but I do know they have the potential to match up with any team in the league. Certainly, there are going to be teams that beat them that play better. We've got some really good teams in the AFC, Chiefs, Bills, obviously the Steelers now as well. The Ravens are 7-4. They're still one of the best teams in the conference. They're battle-tested. I know that they're trying to work in some new pieces as well. There's a long way to go. But you can see where the Ravens would be asking, what if? What if? What if? What if? 3 turnovers, not to mention when they felt like they had momentum, they would somehow get up. Penalty or some other miscue, like I said, the unorganized 2-point conversion that kind of blew everything up. But the three turnovers is certainly a big thing because those are possessions that you give back to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Congratulations to the Steelers. 5 wins in a row. Russell Wilson and the offense didn't look great today, but they did what they needed to do to win. As I say, it was a grind. Coming up, Browns and Saints, so partly AFC North. We'll get to that one because Darren Rizzi, second game as the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, did not start with a clogged toilet, thankfully. But Taysom Hill, monster game for him. What a platform. And also Seahawks and Niners. In the NFC West, what is it about San Francisco this year? They just can't hold a lead inside their own division. But Geno Smith with a moment. Glad to have you with us. Vote for Monday MVP. Yes, Chris Boswell is there, as Mike Tomlin says. He's going to be player of the week. I'm tired of him winning player of the week. We're putting a kicker into our Monday MVP poll because kickers are people too. So at Amy After Hours, also on our Facebook page. We still have a lot of real estate to get to, but I know there's some really big games this week, so I want to make sure we cover those
extensively. Man, I'm tired of him getting player of the week.
And give you what you want as football fans. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Taysom keeps it. He is going to score on the right side. Taysom Hill, RPO. Cleveland bit on the handoff to Alvin Kamara. Taysom kept it to the right side, and from the 5-yard end, you knew he was going to score 10 yards. Saints 8 for 15 on fourth down. Carr goes in motion now. It's QB power for Taysom Hill. Right side, Taysom still on his feet. Taysom 20, 15. See you later, bye. Taysom Hill, what a day. When he got to the second level, there was anybody, though, nobody there. 33 yards. Second and 7, Taysom again. This time, left side, we get to the outside. 25, 30, Taysom on his feet. 40, Taysom's going to go down the sideline. 40, 30, Taysom 20, 10. What a day. See you later, bye. Taysom Hill, guess what? He didn't step out of bounds. Nothing. 75 yards.
Hits. Misses and messes. Time to talk football after hours with Amy Lawrence.
Does Taysom Hill remind you of a tank? And if not a tank, maybe a truck? Oh my gosh. He will truck guys. He will run them over. And it's interesting to think about this game coinciding with Darren Rizzi taking over as the interim head coach for these New Orleans Saints because he and Taysom Hill have got a pretty long history there in New Orleans. They've been together in the Crescent City in the Saints organization for quite a while. So other players, other coaches have come and gone. Taysom and Rizzi, they're two of the holdouts, if you will, the bridges between eras. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on the Saints Radio Network. This one taking place against the Cleveland Browns at the Superdome. And it was, yeah, it was just another one of those games for the Browns where you kind of wonder about the what ifs. What if they'd never made that trade for Deshaun Watson, given him the massive contract that's fully guaranteed? What else they could be doing with that money? Where else he might be at quarterback? I know the relationship with Baker Mayfield had fractured, but it broke completely when they pursued Deshaun Watson. And he's not only a shadow of himself at quarterback, but he's injured most of the time. There's no way to go back. But when I was tweeting about Trevor Lawrence, I heard from a few Browns fans saying, hey, we'll take him. We'll take him here in Cleveland. There was a big moment for Jameis Winston, who's starting, of course, against his former team, by the way, the New Orleans Saints, one of them. Jerry Jeudy gets behind the defense, and he finds Jerry for an 89-yard touchdown. Gave the Browns fans something to cheer about. But we're talking about Justin Tucker missed field goals. Oh, and while we're also in the AFC North, Evan McPherson missed field goals on Sunday night. How about Cleveland? A pair of missed field goals in the first half in New Orleans, and they are unable to take advantage of a pair of Saints turnovers. So, even with Taysom Hill's big day, he also threw an interception. So in the first half, he's got an interception, but then he runs for a 10-yard touchdown. Derek Carr connecting with Marquez Valdez-Scantling again. That's 3 touchdowns in 2 weeks now, and they all seem to be of the long and dramatic variety. So an 80-yard score in this one. Now, Jameis is able to get into the end zone again with Elijah Moore. It's a 30-yard strike to the corner of the end zone for the Browns. That actually ties the game for Cleveland in the third quarter. Ties the game for Cleveland in the third quarter, and they're at 14-14. But the next three New Orleans drives all produce touchdowns. So the Browns' defense kind of folds in that respect, and it's 21 points in the fourth quarter for the Saints, all of them revolving around one Taysom Hill. And you hear the calls there, the 33-yard run on a direct snap, and then another 75-yard run in which he would not be stopped. So here are his interesting totals. 138 yards rushing, 50 yards receiving, 18 yards passing. Plus, are you ready for this? 42 yards in kick returns. He ends up with three touchdowns, but also two turnovers. So his line was much more packed. He was padding his stats more than a Derek Carr.
I've always believed in myself, you know. And it was one of those games where, you know, Clint and the way the coverage was working out, you know, just created opportunities for me. And, you know, I know Riz talked about it, but I thought Derek played a really efficient game, and the ball was going where it needed to go, and it was coming out on time, and we're really hard to defend when we're doing that. And man, he made a lot of really pivotal plays, you know, third down, third and long, and he's making plays to move the chains, and you know, that's a big deal.
When you're playing against one of the best all-time athletes that the NFL has seen, you have to come with it. And he was prepared, and he did a great job today. And he's always done a great job.
Definitely a staple for New Orleans. And I keep wondering, will he ever end up anywhere else? I know he got paid recently. Does he want to try something different? Sometimes athletes, they're comfortable in a particular city, with a particular stadium, with a fan base. It's family considerations. Obviously, he was paid there in New Orleans, and they still use him a variety of ways. But this is different because Darren Rizzi, he's giving him these opportunities that we just haven't seen it earlier this season with Dennis Allen. Taysom Hill, Dennis Allen. And yeah, there were mistakes in there, of course, but back-to-back wins is, in fact, back-to-back wins.
And I thought we did a great job there. There was a couple times where we had some self-inflicted wounds for sure, with the explosive plays for them and the turnovers for us, but kudos to that whole locker room for being able to overcome that. I clogged the toilet.
At least not this week. I wonder if anyone asked him. I actually did consider this. Do you think anyone asked him whether or not he had any issues in the coach's locker room or the coach's office, just to be sure that there wasn't another week. Although you never know. It might turn into one of those superstitions where I've got to clog the toilet because that's how I got my first win as an NFL head coach.
I know,
TMI. I voted for him to be inducted into the After Hours Hall of Flame. Instead, you all chose Jerry Jones. If you missed it, make sure you go back to our last show on Friday morning and get the great podcast. It was so funny, awesome audio that makes us laugh a bunch. The Hall of Flame Friday, we hadn't done one in quite a while, was producer Pete's first.
I think people could relate to Rizzi. That's why he probably didn't get the Hall of Flame.
Well, Peter Schwartz certainly can. He tries to tell those stories on the air when he works with us, and I refuse to let him. I do not want to hear Peter Schwartz talking about clogging up the toilet. Uh-huh. No, this is not a potty humor type of a show,
No. Which
is why we're transitioning immediately from the Saints, who've won back-to-back games, to their former coach, who's now in Denver. Do you like that segue? The Broncos hosting the Falcons at a near perfect day for Bo Nix. In fact, the rookie QB logs a 145.0, in case you're keeping score at home, a 145 passer rating. He goes 28 of 33, 300-plus yards, and count them, 1, 2, 3, 4 touchdown passes.
Nix will operate under center on second and six from the Falcon 41. Play fake. Bo rolls to his right, squares his shoulders, throws a strike. That ball caught, and this is little Jordan Humphrey pulling away to the 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Denver!
That's the call with Dave Logan on Broncos Radio. There are others that we could share with you, but I know you want to hear from Sean Payton and Bo Nix, not to mention the Falcons. The Denver Broncos go 7 of 12 on third and fourth down. They're perfect in the red zone, 4 for 4. Only one penalty flag, which to me might be the most impressive part of this. Now, they were home. The crowd helps there. But how about 400 total yards to only 226 for the Falcons, who were relatively miserable? This is the best game of the year for the rookie Bo Nix.
Those games are a lot of fun. They're, you know, what you work for. They're why you play the game, for experiences like that. All the receivers, tight ends, they just made plays when their number was called. I think we, you know, there's no telling how many guys caught a pass today.
He's smart with the football. He makes plays with his feet. You know, there's a lot of times you're calling plays for certain looks. The looks aren't there. He's got that ability to create and all the while protect the football. I thought he played really well.
It's kind of cool. You can see the progression of some of these rookie quarterbacks. Now, Jaden Daniels started out like a house on fire with his accuracy. Maybe the team is relying on a bunch of young guys and have kind of come back to earth a little bit. But they were ahead of the game, I think, in terms of their building culture. They're going to be great. And they're still very much in line for a playoff spot. The Patriots started at rock bottom. And they put Drake May in there after, what, a month or so. He ended up getting hurt and so had to see Jacoby Brissett back out there. But steadily each week, Drake May is figuring it out. You can see it. Now, it's still a rookie quarterback and rookies giveth and they taketh away. But you could see him figuring it out. And I feel the same way about Bo Nix. These are reps that are relatively pressure-free. Now, in the NFL, there's always pressure. But because of the AFC West, where right now the Chiefs dominate, the Chargers are only two games back, these are reps that Bo Nix can make without all the eyeballs of the world on him. Now, in Denver, of course, football's big business. But you know what I mean? They're not a team that's grabbing a whole lot of national attention. And so he's getting the reps that he needs, and he's steadily figuring it out. And I've actually seen people start to tout him as a dark horse for rookie of the offensive rookie of the year, even though Jaden Daniels is kind of has been considered a shoe-in for that award. Now, Justin Simmons, he was a Bronco. Now he's a Falcon. And yeah, he had a front row seat as part of that Falcons defense to see what Bo Nix was doing.
It's the way that they were operating and the way that Bo was evaluating and moving the ball, taking the checkdowns when he needed to. That just allowed them to get into a rhythm offensively that, you know, defensively we just couldn't break.
So Justin Simmons didn't play with him, obviously, because they were kind of ships passing in the night. The Falcons, they, a couple weeks ago, I saw people tweeting about them as a Super Bowl contender. Now, maybe that's getting ahead of yourself because it was week 8 or week 9, but they've dropped back-to-back games. Now, they still have a 2-game lead in the NFC South because nobody else cares to win that division, but this is not how they want to play. They're not going to scare anyone playing like this, and their offense could do a whole lot of nothing. They only got into the red zone one time, and they were 0-4. One in the red zone. Kirk goes 18 of 27, not even 200 yards. He has a pick. They didn't run the ball really, but why would you when you're behind so quickly? And the Broncos, they were slicing and dicing that defense, and so it really limited what Kirk Cousins and the Falcons could try offensively.
Well, there's no magic formula, but I think that having conversations this week to say, hey, what are we doing well, what are we not doing well, and then how do we fix it? Those are important questions to ask, but the answers are even more important as to how you fix it. And that's, you know, to be determined. That's, you know, tomorrow and Tuesday. And so, you know, those are important dialogues that still need to happen. And then, you know, time will tell. You know, we'll look back and see, you know, how the answers to those questions were. But that's an important deal.
A 38-6 final. 38-6. So this is a gut check moment for Kirk Cousins and the Falcons, for sure. This is not what they had in mind. Even if they do end up winning their division, they're going to need to show something that's a little bit grittier than what I've seen from them. I don't want to call them soft because I think that's unfair. These guys are all tough. They're out there working hard. But for me, when it comes to the Falcons, your first option should be Bijan Robinson. I feel like you should build from there. And yes, Kirk Cousins is a veteran quarterback. He can deliver the football. But you look around the NFL, and the teams that win consistently have the ability to run the ball. Now, with the Bills, it's generally Josh Allen. So That's a little bit of an aberration, but the winning teams, they are able to run the ball. And you don't have an elite quarterback in Kirk Cousins or an offense that's elite, so you've got to be able to establish the run. That's just basic football. So be more of Bijan Robinson, but when you fall behind early, obviously, that's not as much of an appealing option. Coming up, Seahawks and Niners, and is this a game a week that puts San Francisco on life support? Well, in their division, there's always hope. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Peter Schwartz.
I clogged the toilet.
No!
Infinity TMI. Sports Network. Sports Flash.
This report is sponsored by LinkedIn. Let LinkedIn's deep candidate insights help you find your next Pro Bowl hire today. To post your job for free, go to linkedin.com/recruitment. Terms and conditions apply. Let's begin with Sunday Night Football. The Chargers and Bengals tied at 27 late in the fourth quarter.
Hand off to Dobbins. And there goes Dobbins on his horse to the 20, to the 15, to the 10, into the end zone. Touchdown, Chargers. 29 yards. J.K. Dobbins with 18 seconds left.
For J.K. Dobbins, his second touchdown run of the game. Matt Smith on Chargers radio, and the Chargers beat the Bengals 34-27. Now to Orchard Park, an AFC showdown. The Bills trying to hand the Chiefs their first loss of the season. The Bills with a two-point lead. They were driving late in the fourth quarter. And a fourth and two, could have gone for the field goal, but instead...
Allen going to step up in the pocket. Now he's going to take it and run, and he's got the first down and more. 10, 5, and muscles his way into the end zone for an unbelievable 26-yard touchdown run. Are you kidding me?
Chris Brown on Bills radio. Bills over the Chiefs 30-21. Buffalo improves to 9-2. The Chiefs drop to 9-1. Elsewhere, Seahawks 29-17, the Vikings over the Titans 23-13, Colts beat the Jets 28-27, the Broncos over the Falcons 38-6, Steelers 18, Ravens 16, Saints 35, Browns 14, Rams over the Patriots 28-22, Dolphins 34, Raiders 19, Lions beat up on the Jaguars 52-6, and the Packers beat the Bears 20-19. NBA, the Cavaliers are now 15-0, beat the Hornets 128-114. NHL Capitals over the Golden Knights 5-2. Alex Ovechkin a hat trick. He's got 866 career goals, 29 away from breaking Wayne Gretzky's record of 894. I'm Peter Schwartz.
You make the call, 855-212-4227. When you want to talk to us, call 855-212-4227.
Second and goal from outside the 10-yard line. Play clock is at 6. They got to snap this with 21 to play in the opening quarter. Pearsall is right. Jennings inside of Debo left. Brock again chased out by DeMonte Raymond Jones. Brock going to run for the end zone and dive for the end zone. Touchdown! San Francisco! McCaffrey the lone back. Brock is under center. Saubert and Debo are right. Jennings and Pearsall left. Play action. Brock going to roll out left. Jennings wide open. Touchdown! San Francisco!
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
We know San Francisco is not a complete team. Though Christian McCaffrey is back, but still without Brandon Ayuk and Nick Bosa got hurt in this game as well. And for whatever reason, maybe because there is no intimidation factor in the NFC West and because all these teams are about mediocre, the Niners have really struggled to hold leads against the Seahawks. And there they were sitting on a lead in the Bay Area after a couple of touchdown passes. That touchdown to Juwan Jennings, just it presses me so much because he and Brock Purdy have developed a great chemistry, a good rapport. And whenever he needs to move the chains or get into the end zone, it seems like he gives the ball to Juwan Jennings, though Christian McCaffrey is a pretty sweet option as well. So yeah, the Niners build a 17-13 lead over Seattle with a pair of scoring drives to start the second half. And the one that I kind of felt like establish their control is the one that ends with Juwan Jennings in the end zone. But it was a 9-minute drive, 9 minutes, 14 plays. And it's Christian McCaffrey and it's Jennings and they're moving the chains and they're steady Eddie. And then right on the heels of that, the defense stops Seattle on fourth down. This is what they need. They need the offense to establish the ball control, to get in the end zone, take the lead, the defense to do its thing. But on the next possession, San Francisco punts, really doesn't take much time off the clock at all. So Seattle gets the ball back with 2.5 minutes remaining and promptly picks up 4 first downs. This was methodical, executed by Geno Smith and the guys that he has on his roster, who are veterans in many ways. Kenneth Walker, we know they've had some injuries, of course, but I love the way they can run the ball with Kenneth Walker. He's been a bell cow in the past. They're able to mix the pass and the run, and that was critical as well. And I think not in any way intimidated by the crowd there or by that Niners defense, and probably a Niners defense that was wearing out, a Niners defense that was getting tired. So the more that Seattle was aggressive and forced the issue with guys like Jackson Smith and Jigba, with DK Metcalf, a couple of catches in there for Tyler Lockett, they were putting the onus on that defense and gaining a full head of steam. Get this, Geno Smith, he was 6 for 7 on the drive. I wrote that down because it stood out to me. And he had a pair of runs. One, to get into range, into field goal range, if that's what they were going to do. But another that indicated, hey, there's going to be no field goal necessary.
Geno gets him back to the line of scrimmage, 22-21, gets the snap, looks, steps up, going to run, 10-5, Geno, touchdown, Seahawks, holy catfish, Geno Smith runs left side. Can't find anybody open from 13 out, 12 seconds left, and the Seahawks take the lead, 19-17. Are you kidding me?
Steve Rabel with the call on Seahawks radio, and actually thinking about it, right, they were down by 4, so they were going for end zone regardless because they needed the win and wouldn't have had enough time to be able to get the ball back, even with an onside kick. So with 12 seconds to go, yeah, that first run by Geno gets them in range so that he can then fight his way through traffic. Now, he didn't get hit a ton, but he was able to snake his way through traffic for that touchdown. And it was actually not that long before Josh Allen's touchdown run that helped the Bills seal their victory against the Chiefs. So you had two really impressive touchdown runs by the quarterbacks in that late window. Only the second Seattle win in their last 7 tries. And yet this one was sweet. Actually, don't we have any post? I don't see any on my sheet.
I gave you one.
Do I have the wrong sheet? Where's my sheet with the post?
Stand by.
Okay, I'm standing by. Oh, wait. Found the other sheet.
Yes.
There's so many sheets that I don't have them together anymore. So 2 things. This is the Seattle win that they needed to kind of stop the bleeding and just put some joy on their faces. And that's a huge deal because it's against the Niners in their own building. And because right now, everybody in that division is all bunched together. So yeah, that's awesome. And for Mike McDonald, in his first season, this is a character building win.
We all knew that was a big game, you know, for obvious reasons, but just really proud of the guys, you know, sticking in there. I mean, I thought, you know, all the points of emphasis we made, you know, throughout the last couple of weeks, trying to take the next step as a football team, just really, you know, showed up.
I said it, you know, earlier in the week that division games are always going to feel like this. These are the most important games of your season. I think the way that we came out and we fought, you know, collectively as a unit, as a team, it just spoke to, you know, our urgency. And I thought the way that we practiced all week, I knew we were going to come out and play well.
Geno Smith with a big game leading the troops. Now, other locker room completely demoralized. This is the Niners' 3rd game in the NFC West in which they've held the lead and have not been able to protect it. And this is a team, again, that it still could very much win the division because right now it's Niners, Seahawks, Rams, who are all at 5-5. Cardinals are at 6-4. The division is very much open. The issue, though, is they can't seem to protect these leads in the late stages. And it's partly on the defense, but it's also on the offense. Because when they had the ball, they could run. They couldn't run really any time off the clock before giving it right back. Now, George Kittle was not in this game, so there's another guy who's off the field. He was in street clothes wearing a headset instead. But, yeah, what about the locker room following this loss?
Not great. I think definitely a tough loss. But just like any week, you know, you got to correct the mistakes, get back to it, and we got a big one this week.
It's just infuriating, honestly. I'm always going to have all the confidence in the world and everybody that we have in our building. You know, all the answers are in here. It's just about doing it.
It's interesting because you hear something similar from the Ravens. In the games they've lost, they felt like it was on them. It was their mistakes that cost them. It wasn't about the other team beating them. And so, yeah, this one is another one that smarts and kind of underscores the weaknesses for the Niners. They're 5-5. I would say while they can still win the NFC West, no one's afraid of them, right? This is not the same Niners team that has been able to get to the Super Bowl multiple times in the last few years. They're 1-3 in their own division. And Nick Bosa suffered a hip and oblique injury. He missed a lot of the second half. Who knows? He could end up being out for a few weeks. You can understand why both Christian McCaffrey and Fred Warner are talking about the mood in the locker room and how they're going to have to rebound. And I mean, Brock Purdy is generally positive, but you can kind of, well, he hates to lose, but you can hear just the reflection of what's happening with this team.
And I feel like, you know, we had just some mishaps with some penalties, and we had opportunities where we're moving the ball and we just kept hurting ourselves. And so operationally, I feel like we got to be better and can't hurt ourselves. And once we have momentum, we got to keep running with it and we got to finish drives.
And what about those two runs by Geno Smith, which were the nail and the coffin, right? If you're using the phrase from the Bengals radio network, I mean, those were two that just, they hurt. They're ones that you remember.
Everyone was in coverage. One was versus zone, the first one. The next one, I believe, was versus man. No one was open in the rhythm of the play, and you got to keep him in the pocket, and he broke through there, and especially on the touchdown run. Guys in man coverage had their backs to him and can't let him out of the pocket there.
At 5-5, this is not what a lot of people expected for the Niners, but remember, they were without Christian McCaffrey for the first half of the season. George Kittle's out. I mean, Purdy even mentioned that after the game, we need Purdy on the field. We'll see what happens with Nick Bosa. Brandon Ayuk is out. Juwan Jennings is out for a while. I mean, it's been a revolving door. NFC West is still there. They still have a long way to go, and I know that's kind of, once you get over this loss, that's what you have to tell yourself. It's certainly painful, but you got to, as my grandmother would say, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.